Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to church. You glad to be here this weekend? Awesome. Awesome. Well, if you're joining us for the first time, a big welcome to you. Welcome to Real Church for Real People. I hope you're having a great experience so far. We are one church gathered in three locations in Middletown, Hockessin, Newark, as well as all of you who are joining us online. And I'm very excited this weekend because at all of our locations, we're about to experience a message that I'm recording live. I've got a bunch of young leaders from our church here in the room. Would you make some noise, guys? So glad you're in the room with me today. And we are kicking off a series called Summer at the Journey. So for the next 8 weeks, we will be highlighting the stories of people in the Bible who live often very imperfect lives, but through whom God did great things. And I think whatever your background with church has been like up until now, you're going to be encouraged by this series. And the reason that I'm recording this message is because my wife Susie and I just began a sabbatical. So our board and our lead team have been working on this since this past fall. We will be away until the end of July. And over the next 2 weeks, we'll be away to rest, reconnect with God, with each other, with our kids, and renew our vision for what we call Journey City, our vision for our region. And Susie and I love this church very, very much. We are planning to stay here for many years to come to serve you. So this is more than just a vacation. It really is an intentional time to step back and spend some time praying and resting and regrouping so that we can step forward into what God has next for our church. And I'm very excited about it, a little bit nervous about it because I don't always love to take time to rest, but I know that it's an important part of the process. And so you may be wondering, well, what's going to change around here the next few weeks? And the answer is basically nothing, except that you're going to have an opportunity to hear from some great voices from inside our church and outside the journey, including some of my favorite pastors from around the country. And I'm very excited about that. Our board and lead team, our staff are going to be continuing to guide our church and all of our leaders here, serving you as we always do, week in and week out. And most of all, what I want you to know most is Jesus will be here. So I hope you will be to just keep gathering, connecting, and serving, leaning into your faith as we head into summer. And then I would love to ask that you would pray just a little extra for me and my family during this time. Pray for us to experience this rest and renewal and to come back better than ever to lead our church and to continue to serve you. It's going to be a great summer. That sound good to everybody? All right. So with that in mind, let's dive into Summer at the Journey. We are starting this series with one of the most fascinating people in the Old Testament of the Bible, one of my favorite characters in the Bible, a guy named David. David was the second king of Israel. He followed in the footsteps of a guy named Saul. And if you know anything about the Bible, if you read their stories, you would know Saul was not a great king. You can read about him in the book of 1 Samuel in the Old Testament. Saul was not a great king, but David was. He was perhaps the greatest king that the nation of Israel ever had. And he was not just a great king. What I love about David was he was someone we can all relate to and someone we can all look up to, because he was, you might be saying, well, how do I look up to somebody who's king? I'm not able to relate to that. I'm never going to be a king. But what David had going for him was he was very honest. He was open about his issues. He was transparent about his inadequacies. And he turned his life over to God. David was a guy who really put his trust in God and lived a courageous life, which all of us can do, whatever our surroundings or circumstances. And David actually is described later in the Bible as a man after God's own heart, which is pretty high praise when you think about it. When God says, here, this is somebody who reflects my character and my heart. So he's a good guy, all right? So everybody's kind of on the same page. David was an amazing human being, amazing king, amazing leader, a great man in so many ways, but Dave did not always get it right. And when Dave got it wrong, he got it really wrong. And just like he got it really right many times, he knew how to get it really wrong. And for a season of his life, David actually messed his life up pretty badly. And we're going to start the series today talking about somebody who made some really bad decisions and almost lost everything as a result. And it all started with a naked neighbor. you should read the Bible. That's all I'm saying. You should read the Bible. This is a true story. And in the part of David's story that we're about to read, what you need to know is he's pretty much on top of his game. He's been king for a while. He's won a bunch of very important battles. He's become very influential, renowned around his area of the world at the time. People are coming from all over to see what David is all about. People know about him and his exploits. He's the man. And this should be the best season of his life. These should be David's best years. He's worked hard. He's built a life. He hasn't taken any shortcuts. He's trusted God with his life. Should have been his best years, and they would have been if it were not for this, that in the spring of the year, when kings normally go out to war, David sent Joab, basically Joab was David's second in command, and the Israelite army to fight the Ammonites. They destroyed the Ammonite army and laid siege to the city of Rabbah. However, David stayed behind in Jerusalem. Late one afternoon, after his midday rest, David got out of bed and was walking on the roof of the palace. And as he looked out over the city, he noticed a woman of unusual beauty taking a bath. It all starts with a naked neighbor. So if you don't consider yourself a follower of Jesus yet, I'm glad you're here. And you have probably heard that people who do believe in Jesus have values around sex and sexuality that are often different from, well, basically anything you would stream on Netflix. We just have values that are different than a lot of the values of the world around us. And sometimes Christians can be arrogant about those values. Sometimes we can be hypocritical about those values, which is, just to be clear, not Jesus' fault, it's ours. But we do have values that come from knowing Jesus. We have this way of seeing our lives and seeing our sexuality and seeing our decisions that is informed not just by whatever is culturally appropriate or acceptable, but by what we believe God shows us in his word and through the character and teaching of Jesus. And Dave is about to violate one of those values. And for me, this hits home. I was about 7 years old when I first got exposed to pornography. The way I remember it, some other kid said, "Hey, you should look at this." And I did. And I didn't know why, but I liked it. And that started a battle in my life that I still have to, all of these years later, be on guard against being reopened. If I'm going to honor Jesus with my life, and again, I understand for some of you today, you don't share these values. I get that. But for me, I believe in what Jesus taught, that to look at someone with lust is to already begin to allow our heart to go in the wrong direction. And if I'm going to honor Jesus with my life, not just when people are watching, but when no one's watching, here's what I've found. It often starts with what I notice. And I am betting that I'm not alone, and not just in the sexual area of life. I think for a lot of us, our best decisions often start with what we notice, and our worst decisions often start with what we notice. Late one spring afternoon, after a nap, Dave goes for a stroll on the roof of his palace, and he notices an unusually beautiful neighbor taking a bath. So now he has a decision to make. We're going to call it decision number one. Now, I want to be very clear about something in case you're wondering. Noticing is not weird. If you live next to me and when I'm taking out the trash, you decided at the same time to take a bath in your backyard, I am probably going to notice, okay? Noticing, that's not weird, okay? It's very normal to notice somebody naked in their backyard. It's going to stand out in most places. I suppose there are areas where it's not a big deal, but in most places, you're going to notice. And there is no indication that David is at fault for this. No indication that he planned it. We're not told, like, David went out on the roof looking for naked people to stare at. That's not how it goes down. He's just going for a stroll on the roof of his palace, and he notices this woman taking a bath in her backyard, and that becomes a crossroads moment for him. This woman is really attractive, and she is really naked. What am I gonna do? This is decision number one. Do I look away or do I get a better look? That's decision number one. It's very simple. Do I go, oh, okay, she's naked. Who do I need to text? Do I say, she's naked, probably need to go back inside, watch ESPN? Or do I go, oh, she's naked. Can I get a little closer? Can I get a better look at how naked she is? Now, we did not pre-record this message because I thought this moment would be uncomfortable, but I'm betting it is. So decision number one, do I look away or do I get a better look? I wonder how many of us, and again, it could be in the area of sex or sexuality, but really could be in any area of our lives. I wonder how many of us are noticing something or someone right now. And it's not like it's a sin. It's not like it's some wrong thing. We didn't intend to notice. We're just noticing and we're thinking, well, what's the harm in noticing? But there's a principle that we're going to see throughout Dave's story. Here it is. It's so important. When it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner the better. When it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner the better. The sooner we make the right call when it comes to feeding sexual desires that could lead us away from our values as followers of Jesus, for all of us who've put our faith in Jesus, the sooner we can do that, the better. The sooner we make the right decisions with our finances, the better. The sooner we face the reality of a relationship that's suffering, the better. The sooner we get honest about what we're really going through and tell the truth about what we're struggling with, the better. Just the sooner the better. But Dave doesn't think about any of that on this particular afternoon. He's not thinking the sooner the better. His head is somewhere else. And we know that because here's what we read next. He sent someone to find out who she was. And he was told she is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite. He sent someone. That is decision number two. Decision number one was, do I look away or do I get a better look? Decision number two is, do I let this go at this point or do I find out more? Such a great opportunity here for Dave to snap out of it, right? Yes, he's beautiful, but I'm married and I want to honor God. So I'm going to ask God to forgive me for looking a little bit closer and I'm going to let it go. I'm going to switch gears. I'm going to just change my focus. I'm not going to allow this to go any further. And instead, what does he do? He sends someone to find out more about her. And he finds out this woman has a name. Take a Bathsheba. That's her name. Might be a coincidence, but her name is Take a Naked Bathsheba. All right, so that's her name. He finds out what her name is. And now he's in this place where he's taken it one step further. Now, I want you to notice something. We don't know who Dave sends, okay? So the writer of scripture here does not tell us who Dave sent to find out more about this woman that he's been looking at. But we do know that whoever it is trying to help. Because when they come back, they're trying to help Dave get back on track. Because when they come back, they say, hey, the woman you've been looking at, her name is Bathsheba, and she is Eliam's daughter, and she is Uriah's wife. Like, hint, hint, Dave. This is not just a random stranger, and this is not an unmarried woman that you're looking at. This is somebody's daughter. It's somebody's wife. You know, we need people in our lives like that who will kindly point out what we have started not seeing as clearly. That's part of what J groups can do for us. That we need a few people going the same direction we are spiritually who can go, they don't make our decisions for us. If we get in community, it doesn't mean that someone makes our decisions for us, but they can give us an appropriate moment to pause. And that's what happens here. And when Dave hears that this is not just some random person, it's somebody's daughter, it's somebody's wife, he has an opportunity to stop right there. Why? Because when it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner the better. When it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner the better. He can still get back on track pretty easily. But unfortunately, he's not done. Watch this next part. Then David sent messengers to get her. And when she came to the palace, he slept with her. So just started with noticing. But man, now it's moving fast, isn't it? Decision after decision. He sent messengers to get her. That's decision number three. And when she came to the palace, he slept with her. That's decision number four. Not long after we moved into our house, this is years ago, but I don't know why, I just remember we had this big spider that found a spot outside our front door. And it would spin its web. It came night after night for several weeks. It would spin its web, and it would wait for us to turn the porch light on because that would attract dinner. And our kids were small at the time. We watched with sick fascination. My wife refused to participate. But the kids and I, we watched with sick fascination as bugs would land in this web and then get stuck. And this spider was so patient. Like if I were the spider, as soon as a bug landed in my web, I'd be like, yeah, what's up now? Here we go. But the spider would stay all the way over in the corner of its web, and that bug would land there. And at first, the bug would be like, oh, trying to get out of the web, putting up a valiant fight, struggling against this situation it found itself in. But over time, the bug's squirming would start to slow down, and moments would pass, and it would just kind of squirm a little bit. And it was clear it was losing the will to fight. And even if that bug could put up a very valiant effort, it was stuck. And so eventually the spider would make its way over to the bug and start wrapping that bug up and captivating it and keeping it in a position where it couldn't do anything about the situation that it had gotten itself in. The options just became more and more limited with every strand. And that's kind of David and Bathsheba here. Now, we don't know how involved Bathsheba is in any of this. We don't know her backstory. We don't know how willing she was. We don't know if David misused his power to manipulate her. We don't know some of the backstory, but we just know this, that at this point, both of them are stuck in a web that they never saw coming. It's in the New Testament of the Bible, a man named James says it this way, temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. These desires give birth to sinful actions, and when sin is allowed to grow, it gives birth to death. Now, you may be like, I'm not sure I believe that, and you may not think that the Bible really has anything to say about your decisions, your actions, but when you think about it, whatever you believe about the Bible, all James is saying is what we already know to be true. And when it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner the better. The sooner the better. Messing up our life often starts with a simple, seemingly innocent desire that, left unchecked, leads to temptation. It's not a sin yet, it's just noticing. But left unaddressed, eventually it entices us. And it wraps us up and it drags us away from God and from our own values, and from each other. And then what happens is everything typically begins to snowball. We start making decisions we never dreamed we would make. How many of us have found ourselves in a place where we thought, man, 5 years ago, I never would have compromised like that. Even 6 months ago, I never would have allowed that to come out of my mouth. I'd never dreamed that I would get to this place in my life. And as it's allowed to grow, unacknowledged, unconfessed, it starts killing the best part of us. It starts killing our souls. That's what James is talking about when he says it gives birth to death. It really starts killing the things that matter to us, our joy, our freedom, our relationships, our perspective, our integrity. And I want you to remember again, all of this starts when Dave just notices Bathsheba. But unfortunately, he doesn't stop there. He doesn't look away, he gets a better look. He doesn't switch gears and let it go. Instead, he finds out more. He doesn't move on, he sends for her. And when he sends for her, he doesn't send her back away, he sleeps with her. And what happens next is Bathsheba becomes pregnant. And now Dave has decision number five to make. Come clean or cover up. And he decides, I'm going to cover this up. And so he invites Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, home from the battle, and he wines and dines Uriah, brings him into the palace, and I'm sure Uriah at first is like, what did I do to get invited to the king's palace? And he gives him a good meal and lots of wine, and then he tells him, go home and enjoy the company of your wife. You've earned it. You deserve it, hoping that Uriah will go home, sleep with Bathsheba, and then think that he is the one who helped Bathsheba get pregnant. But Uriah refuses to go home. He can't justify a night off while his fellow soldiers are still at battle, which has got to just leap out to us. What a difference now in the character of David and the character of Uriah. This guy, David, who was such a man of integrity, now the person who hasn't done anything wrong is refusing to go home and be with his wife, and David has already secretly been with his wife. So now, Dave is staring down decision number 6. Face the music or get rid of Uriah. So the next morning, David wrote a letter to Joab. Remember, his second in command. He's at the war front, at the battle front. And he said this, station Uriah on the front lines where the battle is fiercest and then pull back so that he will be killed. Started with noticing a neighbor. And so Joab does exactly what David commands. Bathsheba mourns for her husband for a while, and then David marries her, and it seems like it's over. David marries Bathsheba, seems like it's over, but the Lord was displeased with what David had done. And it all started with noticing a naked neighbor. So let's play a little game of what if, okay? Stroll on the roof leads to what we called decision number 1. Do I look away or do I get a better look? What if? Let's play the what if game. What if Dave looks away? Well, the Bible would be a couple chapters shorter. And the pain would be significantly less. Some of us may be telling ourselves about some small thing in our lives right now. It's no big deal. Everybody else is doing it. I'm not hurting anyone. What's the trouble? And it's fine. But what if it's the first step on a path that we really don't want to take? What if it's the first step on a path that leads not closer to the things that matter to us, to our values, but away from our integrity, away from our closeness with God, away from our spiritual health and our mental health, away from our family, away from the friendships that really matter, away from our purpose, away from what God has invited us into and called us to do. When it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner the better. Decision number 2, let it go or find out more. What if, let's play the what if game. What if Dave gets a better look, but then he thinks about it and he repents of his lust. He goes back inside, he lets it go. The sooner, the better. Decision number 3, do I stop now or do I send for her? What if he stops here when he hears that Bathsheba has a husband? Sure, it might be embarrassing to admit that he went that far, but can we all agree? The sooner the better. The only thing worse than having to face up to what he's done now is going any further. The sooner the better. Decision number 4, do I send her back home or do I sleep with her? What if before Bathsheba shows up, Dave texts 2 friends from his J group and says, man, I am about to do the dumbest thing ever. Pray for me and tell me to snap out of it. What if? The sooner, the better. Decision number 5, he decides I'm gonna have sex. Decision number 4 leads to decision number 5. Am I gonna come clean or am I gonna cover this up? What if David stops here? There will be consequences, but he can recover. The sooner the better. And then decision number 6, do I face the music or do I get rid of Uriah? And because he can, because of the power he has as king, he can get rid of Uriah. There's still a chance to do the right thing, but there's also a chance to take this even further. And David decides, I'm gonna take this even further, and he has Uriah murdered. The sooner, the better. Now, I know this is a lot, but this is the moment when I want you to remember what I led with today about David, that he was a man after God's own heart. How is that possible? Well, he does end up recovering. God was not finished with his life, and he isn't finished with yours, no matter how far you've gone, no matter what you've done. And I know that because I know God has never been finished with my life, even when I've failed and fallen short. And Dave does become a guy that we can all relate to and even look up to. Because eventually, if you keep reading his story, he confesses his sin. It takes him a while. And by the way, the amount of time it takes him, he will come to see as a waste of time. He went through a lot of pain as a result of his decisions. But eventually, he confesses his sin, and God forgives him and restores him. And it's in the New Testament of the Bible that we actually read that David was a man after God's own heart. He just ends up going through a lot of suffering and pain that could have been avoided. And I think if David were here, what he would tell us is that when it comes to doing the right thing, the sooner, the better. The sooner, the better. Now, I have good news, all right? The good news is this series is going to get a lot more positive after week one. But before we can be inspired, wherever we are in our spiritual journey, to live more exciting, faith-filled lives, we got to start with the stuff that so often gets in the way, what God calls sin. Now, I know it's not a fun word, but really, sin just describes the spider webs that we so often get stuck in. It's the stuff that we didn't see coming, that we never dreamed we would give into, that we never thought was the plan for our lives, but we got stuck. And at first we put up a valiant fight, but what we read in God's word is that actually no matter how hard we fight on our own, we can never break free. We're stuck in sin. We need someone to save us. We need someone to rescue us from this place where we have become stuck. And that's what I know, that when it comes to getting unstuck, only God can do that. And he does that through his son Jesus. And when God sends a message like this one, or when God sends a concerned friend or a moment of awareness or regret, or we hear something or we feel something or we think something that reminds us that this is not God's best for us, listen, when God does that in your life, it's not to condemn you. He loves you. It's to spare you pain that could be avoided. Because of God's great concern and compassion is to let you know that you can turn in a new direction right now and find forgiveness and healing. And that's what God has for every one of us. In the Word of God, we read, all of us have gone astray. All of us have fallen short. All of us. I have, you have, all of us have. But God's not willing that any of us would stay stuck. He wants us to find forgiveness and healing. And we can only find that in him. Forgiveness comes from God. And it only comes one way. Through faith in Jesus and his sacrifice for us. Forgiveness doesn't come by earning our way back to God. It doesn't come by 6 months of good behavior. It comes by trusting in Jesus and surrendering our lives to him. Believing in him. Turning away from our sin. To trust in him. And then healing comes only from God. And it only comes through community with other people who are trusting Jesus. That's how God works. He forgives us through Jesus. And he heals us through community with each other, our friendships with each other. And I'm encouraging you as we head into this summer season, stay connected this summer. If you haven't been connected, get connected. And if you've been connected in the past, stay connected this summer. Find a J group. Do life with other people. Get in community. Get in community where eventually you can start to get honest with God, with yourself, and with someone else. This is where I am. This is what I'm struggling with. This is how I want to live by God's power, but I'm struggling. Will you pray with me? Will you encourage me? Will you cheer me on? Because whether you are wrestling with decision number one or number two or number six or number 106, when it comes to doing the right thing, listen, the sooner, the better. You don't have to waste one more moment of your life you can turn to God right now, and he'll help you, restore you, recover you, and give you new direction. If you're here today and you would say, man, I'm a believer in Jesus, I believe in God, I gave my life over to him, but I need his strength to keep turning to him, and I need his grace to keep living this life in him, I wonder, all over the room at all of our locations and online, would you just lift your hand toward heaven? Hold it up high as a declaration, I need God's word in my life today. And let me pray it over us. God, we love and honor you with all our hearts today. You've been good to us, and you're good to us even when your goodness comes in the form of correction or getting our attention. You don't want us to struggle in the spider web of sin. You've made a way for us to be free through Jesus. And for all of us who know your son Jesus, we still get stuck from time to time in old ways of thinking and speaking and acting and prioritizing. So God, we turn to you right now. Would you make that personal? If you're praying that with me, tell him, God, I turn back to you today with all my heart. Forgive my sin and open my eyes to the areas where the enemy of my faith is trying to drag me away from you. God, you've not come to condemn me today. You've come to set me free. I put my trust in you. And while you let God speak to you in your heart for whatever that area is in your life right now where you need him most, I have mine, and I know many of you have yours. That's what I love about this community of faith. We can bring our real selves here. But for some of you today, any of our rooms and watching online, if you don't know Jesus in a real way yet, here's what I want you to know. God loved David, and you have to get this. God didn't love David any less when David sinned, and he didn't love David any more when David was following him. He just always unconditionally loved David. Problem was not on God's part. God was always willing. It was David who had turned and gone his own direction. And if you're here today and you don't know God in a real way for yourself, listen, you are not written off by God. God has never loved you any more than he loves you in this moment. He's never loved you any less. He's always loved you unconditionally, and he made a way that you could have life in him through Jesus. And if you want to take that step today to put your faith in Jesus, who died to forgive your sins and rose again to give you the power to live a new life, you can. I'm going to lead us in prayer again. I'm going to ask everyone to join me. Open your hearts up big to God. And if that's you today, and you want to begin following Jesus, then I want to encourage you, whisper out a prayer of faith, something like this, right where you are. You can use my words if it helps you. But pray with faith from your heart. Jesus, today, I recognize that I need you. I need you to rescue me, to forgive and save me. I don't want to do life without you anymore. So I give my life over to you. Save me today. And if that's you, while everyone around you stays focused on God, if you would say, I'm praying that prayer today, I'm putting my faith in Jesus, I want to ask you just to lift your hand, all of our locations, hold it up high, boldly. Some of our pastors are just paying attention to this, to just be able to celebrate that with you in their hearts, but lift that hand up high. I'm putting my faith in Jesus today. Online, you can type the word faith in the comments and let us know you took that step. And then Journey, come on, all of our locations, everybody, would you help me? Let's put our hands together, give Jesus all the praise.